This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Turkey shoots down a Russian jet and accusations spread. Brussels remains under a high state of alert. Struggling students find a new way to succeed.
You gotta have confidence. You have to have enthusiasm. You gotta show toughness. And you have to show energy.
A high-profile Hollywood movie looks at the age-old problem of aging. These stories are more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Hours after the Turkish shootdown of a Russian warplane along the Syria-Turkish border, President Barack Obama and his Turkish counterpart Recep Tayyip Erdogan agreed on the need to de-escalate tensions and prevent further incidents. The White House said the two leaders conferred by phone and voiced their commitment to developing a transitional political process for peace in Syria and international support for defeating Islamic State extremists. President Obama says the downing of the Russian plane is evidence of an ongoing problem with Russia's military operations in Syria and that Turkey had a right to defend its territory and its airspace. Turkey's prime minister is strongly defending the shootdown, as Dorian Jones reports.
Turkish Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu robustly defended the downing by two of its fighter jets of a Russian bomber that Ankara claims was violating its airspace.
Sınırlarımızın güvenliği söz konusu olduğunda, ülkemizin bu ateş çemberi içinde...
He says the entire world should be aware and sure that we will do whatever necessary in order to ensure our country's peace and security within all this ring of fire, in order to maintain peace in Turkey. Davutoğlu went on to warn any country that carries out attacks against Syrian groups, including Kurds, Arabs or Turkmen, that Turkey's message would be clear. Ankara has strongly criticized recent airstrikes by Russian forces against Syrian Turkmen, which Turkey considers ethnic kin. Last week, the Russian ambassador was summoned by the Turkish Foreign Ministry, which warned him of serious consequences if airstrikes on Turkmen villages continue, and that Turkey's rules of engagement apply to Russian jets. Under those rules of engagement, Turkish forces can intercept any jet flying in Syria that violates or even approaches its airspace. Moscow claims a downed jet did not enter Turkish airspace. Dorian Jones of VOA News, Istanbul.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says the fighter jet was over Syrian territory, 1 kilometer away from the Turkish border when it was hit, and that it never threatened Turkey. Mr. Putin called it a tragic event that will have serious consequences for Russian-Turkish relations. International Edition's Jim Stevenson spoke with VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf about Russia's response.
The Russian Ministry of Defense has come out saying that one of the pilots was killed as he was descending after they had ejected from the plane. They say that he was shot by ground fire, presumably from Turkmen rebels who were operating in the area. They haven't given any word at all on the other pilot. There was a search and rescue operation taking place, but one of the helicopters that was involved in the search and rescue was also shot at and had to make an emergency landing. It was essentially shot down. And during the search and rescue operation, Russia's Ministry of Defense says one other Russian contract marine was killed in a firefight, apparently. At least that's what they implied. And the others who were involved in the search and rescue were evacuated, and the Ministry of Defense says that they're being treated for minor injuries.
Russia says, of course, it was operating in Syrian airspace. Turkey says that it had contacted the Russian jet several times for several minutes before firing at it, saying that it was encroaching in Turkish airspace. President Putin has really come out with a harsh comment against Turkey.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he's come out very clearly saying that this was a stab in the back by Turkey, that Turkey is associating with, supporting terrorism with its actions. Yeah, also the Ministry of Defense had some very strong denials, saying that there was no attempt, according to them, by the Turkish side to contact their jet, either by communications or visually. So they're just two completely different sides, two different versions of events completely.
President Obama, after meeting with French President François Hollande here in Washington, came out and said that Turkey has a right to defend its airspace. And President Hollande has an upcoming meeting with Putin, which I'm sure now is going to become quite interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. There's going to be a lot of interest in exactly what kind of message the French president will be bringing to President Putin when they meet here in Moscow on Thursday. He had made it clear in his comments with President Obama that he would be saying there could be no real alliance with Russia until Russia really focuses on fighting against the Islamic State. From the beginning of this conflict, when Russia entered the conflict in September, there has been a lot of evidence and a lot of accusations that Russia has been bombing opponents of the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad rather than focusing on Islamic State or other terrorists operating inside Syria. Moscow, of course, has been saying that they're going after terrorists, but they do lump just about everybody into the category of terrorists who doesn't happen to be fighting with the Syrian army. So that's really the contention, and it'll be interesting to see what happens when President Hollande is here and whether or not they can come to any sort of real cooperation other than declarations that everybody opposes terrorism.
VOA Moscow correspondent Daniel Scharf. NATO says it stands with Turkey following an emergency meeting in Brussels of its 28 ambassadors requested by Ankara. But they also appeared eager to lower tensions, stressing the need to reduce the risks in Syrian and Turkish airspace. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg called for calm and de-escalation. New U.S. opinion polls show a majority of Americans oppose bringing more Syrian refugees into the country. Many Republican lawmakers and state governors, as well as some Democrats, say refugee vetting procedures should be tightened to prevent Islamic State terrorists from sneaking in. Supporters of the refugees accuse Republicans of being anti-Muslim, given that most of the refugees are in fact Muslims. That debate was the focus of this week's hashtag VOA TV program. Here is host Michael Lippin.
One of the panelists on our show was a representative of the Syrian American Council. Suzanne Meriden told me that her group is trying to persuade Republicans to give the refugees a chance.
We've actually started this initiative to go out to the governors. We've sent out invite letters saying, let's have you meet with these refugees so you can get to know them. So unfortunately, this whole refugee issue, a lot of people are using it as a plateau for their own political agendas. We want to bring the human part back into it. If some of these governors that are saying no to the refugees meet the people, get to know them, hear the real stories, then they would be more open to understand that these people do need refuge. So we actually are doing press conferences across the United States because we have chapters across, so they're helping us put together these press conferences, and we're calling for an invite, and we hope the governors react, respond, and meet these refugees along with us.
Have you had any responses yet to those appeals?
So we know we're getting a response soon from the Maryland governor. We're waiting to hear what that is, but we feel good about it, and we feel positive, and we're hoping that we can get those meetings happen.
Well, now, I also spoke on the show to Jenny Yang of World Relief, which is the humanitarian arm of the U.S. National Association of Evangelical Christians. I asked her what she thinks of Republican arguments that the U.S. should welcome Syrian Christian refugees rather than Muslims because Christians in particular are suffering religious persecution by Islamic State. Here's what Jenny Yang said.
I do think we need to help religious minorities in the Middle East, including Christians, but helping Christians doesn't mean it has to come at the expense of other refugees, like Muslims who are also persecuted. The hallmark of the U.S. resettlement program is that we accept the most vulnerable refugees, regardless of their nationality or religion, and I think that it should remain that way. We have a strong tradition of welcoming any and all, and we resettle less than 1% of the world's refugees, which means that we really need to welcome the most vulnerable.
In terms of welcoming refugees, there are some conservative groups in America, like the Center for Immigration Studies, who say that the cost to American taxpayers of bringing refugees in is quite high because refugees require a lot of care. They require help to find jobs. Some of them end up on welfare, and they look at the aid that we send overseas and say, maybe we should better spend that money on Syrian refugees where they are in the region. What do you think of that argument?
The numbers that we're talking about in the United States, it's only 10,000 over the next year, which is a drop in the bucket compared to what our allies in the region are facing. So to say that we can accept 10,000 is not a huge number. And also, we work with communities all across the country that are welcoming them, businesses that employ refugees, faith communities that want to welcome them as an expression of their faith. So there is a lot of community support for refugees. We're not just putting them in places where they wouldn't be welcome.
Well, for more on that discussion, you can watch the show on our hashtag VOA Facebook page.
Thanks, Michael. For more of his discussion, you can watch the show on our hashtag VOA Facebook page. Still to come, tutoring both ways. This is VOA.
Health news and notes. This is Living Better.
The World Health Organization recently put processed meats like hot dogs on its Group 1 list of things for which there is sufficient evidence of a cancer link. The WHO put other red meat in a lower classification of colon cancer risk. University of Cardiff professor Robert Picard says the distinction between processed meat and red meat is important.
The uncertainty is generated because, of course, you can treat meats in very different ways. For example, if you're preserving it and adding a lot of smoke, then you can introduce carcinogens, possibly, in that process.
Picard says, however, that people should not panic about their meat consumption.
The bottom line in nutrition is to eat a little bit of as many different things as possible.
Estimates are that some 34,000 deaths from cancer worldwide could be attributed to diets high in processed meat. I'm Martin Seacrest for VOA's Living Better.
This is VOA's International Edition. Belgium charged a fifth suspect with terror offensives related to the attacks in Paris earlier this month. Belgian authorities issued an international arrest warrant for Mohamed Abrini, who was seen driving a car with fugitive Paris attack suspect Salah Abdeslam 2 days before the November 13th attacks, which left 130 dead and more than 300 wounded. Suspected Paris attacker Salah Abdeslam is being sought after authorities said he evaded a massive manhunt involving raids in Brussels and its suburbs. After receiving a tip that Abdeslam was in western Germany, police launched an operation Tuesday but said they found no indication of his whereabouts. A lockdown continues, meanwhile, in Brussels. International Edition Susan Yaki spoke with VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch about the mood there.
A lot of people are depressed because the lockdown is technically continuing while the Christmas season is starting. Tourists are not coming. People at the hotel say they've been getting calls all day long with cancellations for December. But it's a little strange. It's very surreal, actually, because while there are vultures on the streets and still tanks on the streets, at the same time, they're erecting a Christmas manger and all the little Christmas shops are getting ready to open. It seems like people are trying to go back to normal despite the high level of alert.
Heather, perhaps you give us the background on why this alert is in effect.
The government of Belgium last week announced that they had information that led to their belief that there was an imminent threat against the city and that there would be an attack or attacks in the style of the Paris attacks earlier this month. So we've been on the highest alert level since late last week, and there's been, I think, more than 20 people have been arrested. I have heard from sources that they do believe many of those people will actually have to be let go because a lot of the arrests, they found money, but they didn't find weapons or any other proof that these people were actually terrorists. The main person they're looking for is still at large.
How is the Muslim community reacting there?
Well, there's a lot of fear here among Arabs, Muslims, particularly refugees, because they're worried that these attacks in Paris and these possible attacks in Belgium are making the Europeans look at them as potential terrorists. So they're afraid of backlash.
And what about the average citizens? Are they fearful that this terrorist attack may take place, or do they feel protected?
I think it's a mixture of both. A couple of people I talked to recently say that they are scared, sort of, but it's such an overwhelming thing to even think about that they're trying to just put it out of their minds. Like, they can't, you can't imagine walking down the street in a normal afternoon and suddenly it's the worst day of your life and people are dying, or you might, in fact, yourself be hurt or killed. And it's just, it's too much to wrap your mind around. So a lot of people are afraid, but just trying to continue like nothing's wrong.
Is there any idea how long this alert is going to go on?
I think they've said that it will probably go on at least throughout the week. And at the same time, they're opening schools and the markets. And life, like you said, is going to go back to normal despite the fact that they are on the highest level of alert and they do believe that there will be an attack at some point.
VOA correspondent Heather Murdoch speaking with International Edition Susan Yockey. We turn now to the world of social media. The latest travel alert from the U.S. State Department is buzzing online. International Edition's G. Abby Lee is here to talk about it. Hi, G.
Hi, Ray. The State Department's Bureau of Consular Affairs sent out this tweet. Travel alert. Authorities believe likelihood of terror attacks will continue as ISIL/Daesh return from Syria and Iraq. The tweet included a link to the full text of the alert. The Bureau is on Twitter at TravelGOV. But many people have tweeted the latest alert is not specific enough.
Well, that's certainly a concern, and I've heard about that, too. What does it advise people, then, to do specifically?
Well, there are four bullet points. First, it recommends Americans traveling abroad to follow instructions of local authorities and to monitor media and local information sources. Second and third recommendations are about preparing for additional security screening and staying in touch with family members so they can reach you in case of emergency. The last recommendation is to register with the state's Smart Traveler Enrollment Program, also known as STEP.
That's probably the only recommendation that's not just common sense.
Right.
So what exactly is the STEP program?
It's a free service that allows Americans traveling abroad to enroll their trip with the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate. Once you're enrolled, you can receive information about safety conditions in your destination, and the service also makes it easier for the embassy and your family to reach you in case of an emergency. Ray, before I go, I also wanted to introduce a company that's helping people adopt cats and dogs this holiday season.
Well, that's a nice switch from all the gloom and doom. Which company are we talking about?
It's the online retailer Zappos. The company announced it will cover adoption fees from Black Friday through Cyber Monday. It partnered with a Best Friends Animal Society and will donate $150 for every adoption, and details are on their website at zappos.com. If you're living in continental United States and interested in owning a pet, this is a great opportunity. Ray?
Thanks, G. You can reach her on Twitter at G Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. And she also tweets for our VOA International Edition Twitter account at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support of Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. It might sound like a recipe for disaster. Take kids who need to improve their reading skills and have them tutor other kids who have trouble reading. But that's exactly the idea behind a literacy program here in Washington. As we hear from VOA's Faith Lapidus, it's proving to be a recipe for success.
Like many teens, 17-year-old Rico McCard has many things to do after school. But unlike most of his classmates, one of those things is tutoring second and third graders in reading and writing at a nearby elementary school. Rico is one of about six dozen high school students participating in a literacy program run by Reach Incorporated. The nonprofit aims to develop confident readers and capable leaders. Since the program began in 2010, More than 500 high school and elementary school students have taken part. The group's curriculum and creativity coordinator, Lori Pitts, says the teens selected to become tutors are usually struggling in school themselves.
We believe that giving teenagers real responsibility allows them to create change in their community and to actually better themselves, because now they've been entrusted with this big responsibility. So we're basically about using teens to create change in their own communities and to better themselves.
For the teens, the results are obvious and positive.
We actually have a test that tests their reading level at the beginning of the year, in the middle of the year, at the end of the year. And most of our tutors grow about 2 grade levels per year.
I was definitely struggling at least like 3 or 4 classes at least.
Now Rico's grades have improved and he's more confident.
I was kind of shy my first day here at Reach. I didn't really say much. I didn't say much for 2 weeks, actually. I was like by myself in a corner. You know, everybody would look at me. And I just, like, put my head up like this. And every time the teacher had kind of called on me, I would basically, like, shy away from the question, wouldn't really say nothing.
Educators at Reach train the teens on tutoring. They also evaluate their performance. Rico says that helped him understand how to engage young students.
You got to have confidence. You have to have enthusiasm. You got to show toughness. And you have to show energy. Because you're with second and third graders, so you know they're going to show a lot of energy running around everywhere. So you got to match their intensity and definitely sit down and talk to them, because most of the second and third grade students really have bad days and they really don't want to do the work. They don't want to be bothered. So what I do is really just take a break from the work for a minute, you know, tell them how their day was. Or I would play like a small game to get their mind off what had happened.
Games are an important part of this tutoring program, as Lori Pitts explains.
I always try to include an active warm-up for them so that they can have like fun and it doesn't feel like school. And it's usually like a game where they're running across a circle, kind of loosening up, getting to know each other. I like to make it engaging by not always just having them write on a worksheet. Usually there's some sort of component where they pair up or talk to a friend, or they get to apply their knowledge in some way through a game.
The program is making a difference for Judith Miller's students at Payne Elementary School.
They get to see what it is to be with high school students and how the high school students interact with them. When the students give it to them, it's a little different because it's fun. The students are not as direct, you know, with them as if they're a classroom teacher. So they get to do the same standards, but in a different way.
The tutors are paid for their work. But Rico, who's been in the program for 4 years, says it's not about the money.
I'm definitely here just for the kids, to be honest with you. I come here every single day working with the kids, you know, making sure that they're happy. I just basically do my best as what I can do as a person.
That's the best evidence that the Reach program is making a difference for the tutors and the kids they help. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
A new film from Academy Award-winning director Paolo Sorrentino looks at aging and how some of life's most profound events can happen at any time. The movie is called Youth. It stars Oscar winners Michael Caine, Jane Fonda, and Rachel Weisz. Here's International Edition's David Byrd.
Daddy, you will not be bored because I have arranged the full service for you. You're going to have a massage, a sauna, checkups with the doctor every single day to help you get back in shape.
At my age, getting in shape is merely a waste of time.
Oh, gosh, you guys have got a strange friendship.
No, it's just a good friendship. And in a good friendship, you only tell each other the good things.
Did you take a piss today?
4 drops.
You? Same. More or less.
More or less. Yes.
Fred Ballinger and Mick Boyle are best friends and septuagenarians. They are on vacation in the Swiss Alps when Fred, a composer played by Michael Caine, gets an invitation from Buckingham Palace to perform his work Simple Songs for Prince Philip's birthday. Fred turns down the offer, saying he's not interested in performing anymore, even though he is composing music in his head when he's alone. Mick, played by Oscar nominee Harvey Keitel, is writing the screenplay for what he expects to be his last film. Mick completes the screenplay and wants aging diva Brenda Morell, played by 2-time Oscar winner Jane Fonda, to star in it. But she turns him down. Youth is the second English-language film from Academy Award winner Paolo Sorrentino, who directed 2013's Best Foreign Language winner, The Great Beauty. At the premiere in Los Angeles, Sorrentino said he wrote the film with Kane in mind.
Beauty is a perception that you can have in the life. So the idea of youth can belong also to the old people. Not the youth in the body, but the youth in the mind, the youth in the perception of the freedom that you can have in the future.
Jane Fonda said that youth explores what it means to be young, in mind and spirit, if not in body.
Aging really has more to do with spirit and passion and staying open and not becoming cynical, staying curious, more than the number of years you've been alive.
Michael Caine says that the movie offers hope, the hope of a full life, regardless of chronological age.
It's saying to old people, don't be afraid. And it's saying to young people, don't be afraid. It's okay. It's all right. And I remember a line that I said in the doctor's. He says, how do you feel about being old? And I said, I don't understand how I got here. But the great thing about being old is you got here.
Music is all I understand. Because you don't need words and experience to understand it. It just is.
The movie also features Rachel Weisz as Fred's daughter and assistant Lena, who wants her father to take the job for the royal family, even though he says that he can't because only his wife, who is now incapacitated, can sing the soprano role. Youth also stars Paul Dano as Jimmy Tree, an actor researching an upcoming role, and features an appearance by former Argentine soccer star Diego Maradona as Raleigh Serrano. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That's it for this edition of International Edition. More news and information along with videos and podcasts available on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The flow of illicit narcotics across the U.S.-Mexico border fuels violence in both countries and at our shared border. It is incumbent on both countries to address this challenge. To date, the U.S. has delivered to Mexico more than $1.4 billion in assistance, including training and equipment. This assistance has been delivered through the Merita Initiative, an unprecedented partnership between the United States and Mexico to fight organized crime and associated violence while furthering respect for human rights and the rule of law. At present, said U.S. Assistant Secretary for International Narcotics and Law Enforcement Affairs William Brownfield, the U.S. has more than $600 million in bilaterally agreed-upon projects with Mexico. These projects fall into three areas. The first is professionalizing the Mexican law enforcement agencies. The Bureau of International Narcotics and Law Enforcement, or INL, is working to strengthen policing capacity at state and municipal levels in Mexico. As a result, said U.S. Assistant Secretary Brownfield, we expect there will be greater observance of civil and human rights and growing trust in these institutions by the people of Mexico. This is vital to any effort to stem drug trafficking, reduce the capabilities and influence of drug cartels, and secure our border with Mexico. With regard to border security, both countries have committed to increase Mexico's ability to interdict illicit narcotics, arms, and money, as well as strengthen control of porous border areas. INL is providing more than $125 million in inspection equipment and about 340 canine teams deployed at ports of entry and internal checkpoints throughout the country. Mexican drug cartels have in recent years increasingly turned to heroin trafficking. Under Merida, the United States is cooperating with Mexico to combat the threat posed by heroin production and trafficking. INL is building Mexico's heroin interdiction capabilities, including training, inspection equipment, and providing canines. Mexico is committed to judicial reform, which is slated to be implemented throughout the country in mid-2016. The United States will continue to work with Mexico to build a strong and able justice system there to improve rule of law efforts. INL's work in Mexico under the Merita Initiative has already achieved far-reaching positive results. And I am confident, said U.S. Assistant Secretary Brownfield, that with U.S. cooperation and assistance, Mexico will continue to make progress.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.